Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here, we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, Governor Brian Kemp looks to upgrade the infrastructure for the state's 911 emergency hotline. Some Georgia healthcare providers urge the government to take action against pollution. And today is the birthday of jazz pioneer Mary Lou Williams, who was born in the Atlanta neighborhood of Edgewood in 1910.
She told this story of sitting on her mother's lap while mom was practicing. Her mother played organ at church in Edgewood.
Today is Thursday, May 8th. I'm Peter Biello, and this is Georgia Today. Georgia Catholics are reacting with excitement and hope to the election of Pope Leo XIV. Father Michael Bremer ministers at University of Georgia's Catholic Center. He, along with millions worldwide, watched Leo's first appearance.
So I don't speak Italian, but the word that I was picking up on during his initial announcement was pace, peace. So he was using that word a lot. So the hope is that he brings a little bit more peace into the world.
He called it surreal that the church has its first American pope. Larry Witt, a member of St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Macon, was at the church to drape yellow and white bunting on its front doors in the color of the papal flag to show there's a new pope.
Of course, we'll all be happy come Sunday with Mass and stuff, you know, and be talking about and singing and just giving praise to thank God we got us a pope. But I'm extra glad that we got an American pope.
Leo is a Chicago-born, now former cardinal. Governor Brian Kemp signed into law today a bill that paves the way for a multi-million dollar upgrade to the state's aging 911 infrastructure. Georgia is the only state in the Southeast that hasn't yet overhauled its emergency communications from an analog to an internet-based system. Kemp says House Bill 423 provides critical new technology.
Once complete, this system will improve both response times and the impact of our first responders, and that means safer, healthier communities literally in every corner of our state.
Kemp also signed into law five other bills addressing public safety at a ceremony in Middle Georgia's Monroe County. Southeast Georgia Congressman Buddy Carter announced his bid for U.S. Senate today, becoming the first GOP candidate to enter the race against Democratic incumbent John Ossoff, GPB's Benjamin Payne reports.
The 67-year-old Republican and pharmacist has represented Georgia's first congressional district since 2015. The district includes a largely rural swath of Southeast Georgia that he's easily carried in past elections, but it also includes Savannah's Chatham County, which voted against him last year. Carter's campaign announced his Senate bid in a video Thursday, featuring clips from President Donald Trump's campaign rally in the hostess city last September.
Trump has a warrior in Buddy Carter.
Buddy Carter, warrior, great guy.
In response to Carter's bid, Democratic Senator John Ossoff's campaign released a statement saying the 38-year-old incumbent is building what it called, quote, the most effective and unstoppable turnout effort in Georgia's history. For GPB News, I'm Benjamin Payne in Savannah.
Some Georgia healthcare providers are urging the state and federal government to get serious about pollution. They say dirty air puts people at risk, and without interventions, health outcomes will worsen. GPB's Sophie Gratis has more.
Higher rates of asthma, heart attacks, and reproductive issues have all been linked to pollution, according to leading health agencies. Georgia Clinicians for Climate Action and others say that's a public health crisis. At a recent healthcare conference, the coalition warned that failing air quality grades are leading to sick patients. Pediatrician Michael Greenwald says the latest fight is public opposition to a plan from Georgia Power to keep its two coal-fired power plants in North and Middle Georgia online years longer than expected because of rising energy needs.
But if our priority is our health, then we need to transform ourselves into an economy that actually sustains us with our health in mind as well.
Georgia's Public Service Commission is holding a public comment hearing on the plan in Atlanta later this month. For GPB News, I'm Sophie Gratis.
Research shows teens are more likely to turn to their parents when they need support rather than peers or professionals. That's according to a national campaign making resources available to families needing help, GPB's Ellen Eldridge reports.
During adolescence, parents can be quick to offer suggestions and advice, but judgment-free listening is the way to start a conversation. That's according to Charmaine Jackman, a psychologist with the Ad Council. She says parents must stay in communication with their kids and watch for changes.
Changes in mood, changes in their eating habits, changes in friendships, isolating more, spending more time away from family and away from their friends, losing interest in activities that they previously were really excited to be part of. Those are some really important markers for parents to notice.
Jackman says their Sounded Out Together resources include conversation starters and guides on listening to help children learn to work through their own problems. For GPB News, I'm Ellen Eldridge.
Georgia Power says construction is underway on battery energy storage systems at 4 locations across the state. The move is expected to add more electrical generating capacity to help meet a growing demand for power, primarily by large industrial customers. 2 of the systems will be located near existing solar facilities at Robins Air Force Base in Houston County and Moody Air Force Base in Valdosta's Lowndes County. The 2 others will be located at the retired coal-burning plant Hammond in northwest Georgia's Floyd County and at a battery facility in Metro Atlanta's Cherokee County. Battery storage is seen as critical to diversifying the state's energy mix to include more renewable power. The Trump administration has canceled a $19 million infrastructure grant awarded to the South Georgia city of Thomasville by the outgoing Biden administration. City officials today confirmed they received notice last week that the Environmental Protection Agency was terminating its community change grant. The award promised to replace an outdated wastewater collection system, renovate a school gym, build a healthcare clinic, and provide home improvement grants. It was among the more than 100 grants touted by the Biden administration in December as advancing environmental and climate justice goals. And today is the birthday of groundbreaking jazz composer Mary Lou Williams. Born in 1910, she spent her first 4 years in Atlanta's Edgewood neighborhood before her family moved to Pittsburgh. She became one of the most influential jazz pianists of the last century, shaping both the big band and bebop sounds with collaborators including Duke Ellington and Charlie Parker. Atlanta jazz musician Jeff Crompton was instrumental in getting a historical marker recognizing her birthplace dedicated last weekend.
The first time she touched a keyboard was in Edgewood. She told this story of sitting on her mother's lap while mom was practicing. Her mother played organ at Beulah Baptist Church in Edgewood.
Crompton worked for years to uncover details about Williams' childhood and says it's important for Atlanta to honor the jazz legend born there. And here's a bit of her music. This is the Mary Lou Williams Trio with 8th Avenue Express Take 1 from the album Roll 'Em. In his new collection of short stories, Aruni Kashyap comes back time and again to the tension between individual desires and society's limits. Whether writing about an academic struggling against the cultural expectations of his peers, or residents of his native Assam clashing with separatist insurgents, or young gay men expressing their love in India when such romance was outlawed, Kashyap writes with insight and compassion. The book is called The Way You Want to Be Loved. Recently, I went to the University of Georgia in Athens, where Kashyap directs the creative writing program, to speak with him about his book. Aruni Kashyap, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you so much for coming down to Athens here. It's a pleasure to have you in my office.
I wanted to ask you about academic life. Because you studied in Minnesota, as some of these characters do, I was wondering how much overlap there is between your experience and the experience of the characters in this book.
I think there's a lot of overlap, and even though I am actually from an academic family, my mother was a professor of Cotton College State University, which is one of the oldest universities in Northeast India. I'm not at all new to academia, but at the same time, in a post-colonial country, actually languages also have different kind of privileges. So being in English academia and Hindi academia or Assamese academia, Bengali academia is very much different than each other. So when I actually entered academia in the English academia, it has certain privilege of class and caste associated with it. So I was always an outsider in the academic space. These experiences actually enables me, this marginal position enables me to actually point out to various blind spots that we liberals, we progressive people have.
When you were studying in the United States in Minnesota, did you have a roommate like Mike? Mike appears in a couple of short stories in this book. He's a white guy who's kind of insufferable. He's not as culturally sensitive as he could be, to put it mildly. And he made the characters in your stories really uncomfortable and in some ways wielded his power, perhaps without even knowing he was wielding his power, but doing it rather insensitively. Did you have a roommate like Mike, or did you know someone like Mike?
I knew many people like Mike. Mike is obviously an amalgamation of many, many Mikes I knew as a student in Minnesota. I did have a roommate who was sort of strange and was not very sensitive towards the world, let's say. But I wanted Mike to be so much more exaggerated than the real Mike because, again, for dramatic effect. And I think that combining the many different characteristics of these Mike-like people enabled me to comment on how actually differences are perceived and accepted and negotiated in a society that is not comfortable with immigrants, not comfortable with difference. And I wanted to, again, write about someone like Mike who actually does a lot of these things without being completely, they don't have the self-awareness that they are actually saying these things that are offensive.
I wanted to ask you about the political violence in these stories. There are some stories that depict just absolute brutality. And I was wondering how you went about writing about those things and what well of knowledge you were drawing on there.
A lot of these brutalities I grew up reading. I actually didn't know they were unusual. I was born in 1984. The violent insurgency against Indian rule started in Assam in 1979. So by 1984, the insurgency was at its peak. As a result of that, I did not know a state or Assam that I grew up that was without violence. The violence still continues. I like to tell this story because I realize how important this was much, much later. The story goes like this. Every day, my mother made it a habit to see me once and look at me for a few seconds before I hopped into the school bus. And I thought, you know, this is mother being mother. You know, she's actually loves her son so much. And she did that to both me and my brother. But much later, when I grew up, I asked her, why you used to do that? She said, you know, there was so much violence in Assam that I was preparing myself if this was the last time I'm going to see you. And that changed everything for me because that means that every parent, every mother, every grandmother, every loved one lived like that actually in Assam or in Kashmir or many other places where anti-India independentist movements still are going on or have experienced those in the last few years.
You write a few stories here about what it's like to be gay in India. I think there is a story where it is illegal and then a story where it's not illegal, but it's a little bit scandalous to have a homosexual relationship. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like writing those stories?
You know, I lived in Delhi for the longest time. I had a very robust queer community. I was bothered by a lot of the stories that I was hearing, and I wanted to write about how the person and the state and the individual is constantly in clash. And writing about the anti-homosexuality laws, which is Article 377, that was, I think, scrapped in 2019 or 2018. I can't remember the date right now.
I think it was 2018.
Yes, right. Thank you. September, I think it was. Yeah. It was scrapped then. Until then, people were, that law was used to vilify, torture a lot of people I knew. A lot of people had to suffer heartbreaking consequences, as you see in the story. The story actually, I wrote that The Way You Want to Be Loved is a gay romance story. The story actually, I heard from a friend, and it made me so angry. So I wanted to give it a different ending because it was so heartbreaking for me to know that it's just because two men were expressing love and it was not obscene, they were holding hands, they had to go through that horrific experience. And it was so common, and it is far more dangerous for trans people as well. So that is the reason I wrote about it, actually. It was, in a way, for me to express my own outrage and sorrow and create a new ending for these two characters.
Aruni Kashyap, thank you so much for speaking with me. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much. These are amazing questions. I really, really enjoyed answering them. Thank you so much for reading my work with so much care.
And Aruni Kashyap's book, The Way You Want to Be Loved, is the subject of the latest episode of Narrative Edge, GPB's podcast about books with Georgia connections. Orlando Montoya and I spoke about other aspects of his writing, including his use of folklore and the wicked stepmother trope to illuminate political conflict. Dive deep into a book and literary culture with Narrative Edge. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. And that's it for this podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in to Georgia Today. Remember to check our website, gpb.org/news, for any updates on these stories and news stories that our reporters are writing right now. If you haven't subscribed to this podcast yet, do it now. We'll be back in your podcast feed tomorrow afternoon, and send us your feedback. The email address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.